There we go. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I have a lot of decisions to make lately, and I feel like an angst that comes up, like even like right now, somebody just called and they're coming to help with the house. And I was, I wanted to finish this call and they'll be here any minute. And I just noticed this little split inside. Like even my husband said to me the other day, well, you've got to decide. And I just felt this rush of irritation go through because, yeah, I know I have to decide, but I'm feeling this pressure of, time and, I feel sometimes just when the life is moving me and there's nothing to worry about, but then all of a sudden, something will poke
You kind of
the
fall out of that, you fall out of that stream, and suddenly there's a lot to decide, right? There's a lot
Especially
to.
when there's a sensations in the body, like,
Yeah.
can you kind of help me through this and maybe some questions or whatever to help with working through it?
In the end, you won't like making decisions because decisions indicate a choice between two things, and there aren't two things. So this sense of deciding will feel more and more false, there might be a superficial decision thought happens eventually, but if you recognize that feeling torn between two options or having to decide between two options can't really be how it is actually. Do I get to stay on this call or go help with the what's happening in the house? First glance, you go, say, well, I want to stay on the call because I'll feel better and I want to get everything I can out of this, and it'll feel worse if I go. I'm not going to have the same experience. But if you realize that they must be the same one, then it's possible to feel exactly the same way as you move into, if you have to leave this call. Obviously, it's going to be recorded anyway, so you won't miss it. But just challenge that this idea, can you see this unconscious idea that this one's going to be worse? This one's what I want to do, and this one's, what if that's not true? What if you can feel the same all the time? But there might be a superficial thought that happens right now. I've got to go, this person's here. I've got to leave this call. But it's a superficial thing, isn't it? It's not really how it is underneath. There's just the one noumenon showing up as all of these bodies. And I don't have to believe that my experience needs to be diminished because I've got to choose to do this other thing. Because that the essence of a decision is otherness, isn't it? It's two-ness, it's duality. There's nothing wrong with the sense of duality, as long as you know underneath it's not really like that. And then you'll find it much easier to make a decision. You'll just spontaneously, right, this is what I'm going to do. This feels right. And you start to base your decisions more and more on how authentic and how good it feels rather than what you think you should do. and that decision process is easier when you realize it's not really different. There aren't really two options or three or four, whatever the choice is, the decision. It feels more and more artificial and false in the end to have to choose. More and more you're just watching, and somehow how decision happens to the body and mind, and something good comes out of it. So it's something crazy, like the guy that turns up to look at your house suddenly really interested in meditation, just started meditating, or something wonderful happens like that, and you have this really open conversation, and you really realize just how deep your seeing has gone talking to this other being, and it becomes this wonderful experience. But if you're going into it with this idea that I don't really want to do that, I want to stay here instead, I want to do this, then guess what you're gonna experience?
Right. And like the other night, I got a text that they were coming in the morning and we had to rush to, get things ready for them. So feeling like not having enough time. And I didn't want to set myself up for this happening all the time. So I was wondering about questioning what it is that brings about these scenarios.
Can you see that you feel separate to time? I don't have enough time.
Okay.
I'm trying to get more time. It's very subtle, and of course all of us believe it until we don't. But if I am the noumenon and I'm outside of time, time's happening inside me based on this idea that I'm a someone somewhere, you know, and so if I stay outside of time, then events that flow in time will flow more to my liking, and I won't feel buffeted around. And it's another common area, isn't it, that where we have these really set beliefs that I only have so many hours a day, I don't have time for this, don't want to do more of that. And so if you can see, if I'm asking the question, where do I end? Where, how far do I reach? And I'm really feeling a self-imposed limitation here, that I'm experiencing a lack of something, then that must be outside of me by very definition, isn't it? What I'm trying to get and bring to me, even if it's something very subtle like time or energy, it's still because it feels external to me and I have no control over it. But if you're infinite and omnipresent, it's not really like that, is it? And you'll experience this not enoughness to kind of show you where you feel separate to things. We all do, you know. It's whichever way that's showing up is, you know, for me it was all kinds of sleep and time and energy. I don't have enough energy, I can't get enough sleep, you know, no matter what I do. It was just, what is going on here? Until I really realized it's where I'm holding myself as a separate being still, where I'm imagining this boundary. Does that help, or?
Very much. Thank you so much. I'm so glad I got a chance to ask my question before he comes.
Perfect timing, yeah. Right. Lovely. Fantastic. Good to speak to you. Okay, Videa.
Hi, Helen. Yeah, there's today when we were chanting, listening to a meditation, and it just got more and more that refined oneness, the bodiless. It just got more and more refined until just the chants, and I started really crying through it and laughing through it. Everyone's voice was my voice. There was absolutely, well, there still is, absolutely nothing outside myself. And even when I opened my eyes and could see the space, it's just absolute no separateness. It was, well, it is. It's just so wonderful to... and just, yeah, just the tears to chanting, it's just a sharing that it just felt more and more refined. Mm-hmm. Totally can't describe it at all.
If I asked you when did you suddenly realize that you were one with everything, you probably couldn't tell me. It's just more of a gradual, deeper and deeper conviction. You know, it's just getting deeper all the time, isn't it? There isn't a moment in time where we go, right now, I don't feel separate to anything. It's just kind of underneath the thoughts and the emotions and everything. There's just a growing conviction day by day. It's very obvious. More and more that I'm not really separate to anything. It gets clearer.
And it definitely is clearer, and recognizing it's absolutely no difference. Like nothing can change. Everything still is what it is.
Yeah.
The objects, they're just the same. The same. I cannot separate anything from that. It's just the love. I have not experienced so much love, just everything, yeah, it's just that one energy, one, yeah, I can't get into any words, but looking, like you said, looking back, I think everything's just always been so gradual. And all I could say is everything's just refining and refining.
And that will never stop. It's still happening for me, deeper and deeper each day, clearer and clearer. And it's amazing, right, that there's no end to it. Every day, for the rest of your life, you're going to feel better and better. It's pretty awesome, isn't it, that you can't get to the end of it.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that with us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Enjoy the love.
Yeah.
Okay, Patricia. Excuse me.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you doing? I'm good, thank you.
Good.
I have a more Debbie Downer type of question, and
that's okay too.
It's about I think it's trauma, the best way I can say.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you're doing contemplation, you do not always find treasures. Sometimes you find things that you don't want to find.
Yes.
So what happens is that you realize, I mean, at least in my contemplation, I've realized that there is a lot of things that go back to decisions or perceptions that one acquired as a child or as a very young. And it's not like an adult where you experience trauma differently than as a child. So the template becomes as a reality about how to be in the world. And you can see that template or that story running.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's extremely fearful
and
difficult. And there's a whole, you know, there's a lot of information out there about somatic therapy, being with your feelings and your thoughts and processing of that whole thing. And at what point does it become like a merry-go-round circle when you're just feeling your body all the time and processing your thoughts, which, you know what I'm saying? So at what point is it like doing too much of that? And then I am the previous person, Saboteur, that spoke, you know, she was having more of a mystical big picture experience, which is more of the love. If you find the love, it will heal and other things take care of themselves in a way, if you can come from that point of view. The rest falls into place. So I guess I'm having challenges in which I see this dark circle as more I contemplate about these things that I can see there. And at the same time, I understand that you have to do the somatic and that whole thing, but at the same, so I have two different ways of seeing what you encounter.
That's why I always liked to find the most direct question I can find, because if I'm contemplating on a really direct question, like how far do I reach? Then as I begin to have more of that mystical knowing, as you were saying, in that open stance of contemplation, I'm going to be doing the emotional work anyway. I'm going to be feeling the emotions that come up. I'm going to be seeing these templates, as you call them, which is a lovely way to, you know, sort of describe it. I'm going to be more just able to see them, let them come up without being able to identify them. If I'm asking a question, I can't identify with a story that comes up as an answer. There's phenomenal answers to any question. So thoughts and emotions and experiences, memories, what we're calling trauma here. And these stereotypical archetypal ways of being in the world, you know, ways that I've learned to be, so that I'm accepted or I'm safe or, you know, whatever it is that we need. And so we can see those coming up in the contemplation. And the direct question is going to keep you at the root of the illusion, the root of all fear, that the source of fear is this idea that I am separate to something. Because if I'm separate to something, it's outside of me, it's outside of my control, especially if that is, as a small child, a parental figure or an authority figure or someone I need to take care of me when I'm small, then if I feel separate to them, I'm going to be trying to get them to like me. I'm going to try to change myself to feel more accepted, more approved of, more, you know, all of those things. So as I'm working at the root of fear, which is this idea of separation, that's the root of all fear. There's something outside of me that I can't control. You know, and there's something outside of me that I need that I can't get, like security, like love, like approval, like acceptance. So as I begin to realize that I'm not really separate from anything, as I'm working on such a direct question, all the ways that I have felt separate will come to the surface in that contemplation, as you said. But in the openness of the question, I won't be able to identify with those. And this is the only time for me that I could really look at this stuff without being terrified of it, without rejecting it, without wanting it or needing it to go. In the openness of the question, there was just this deep insecurity that would come up, deep unworthiness, deep a recognition, as you pointed to, that I've never been myself ever. I've always been this, like we all do, I've changed shape to fit in with other beings. And I don't even know who myself is as a human being, my authentic self, because we've all learned these ways to kind of be this chameleon, you know, to fit in with whatever's going on. So as you ask that question, you begin to engage both methods, both ways, so to speak. And in the openness that comes, that there's not going to be this need to push away this trauma. It'll be seen, but you won't be able to identify with it. You know, you can feel anything. You can feel the worst shame, the worst fear, intense anger, apathy, grief, anything. If you're not believing any thoughts around it, which is automatic when you're asking a question, you won't be able to identify. So you'd have this strong trauma come up. And the moment you feel it come up, you can say, where do I reach? Where do I end? Just in wanting to see that, you're going to be the space in which this trauma is appearing rather than the someone to whom it's happening. And it's a hugely different experience, as you probably started to really grasp. The question, a deep question like this is going to allow both of those modes to kind of come into one. Well, I hope you kind of get a sense of that already, that it's only really from knowing what I am to some degree that I can actually look at this old stuff from what I thought I was. You can't do it from ego, can you? It's just, it ends up in this endless cycle of trying to process stuff that's been generated out of this belief, but I'm still believing this belief, so it's just never ending. You know, so as you go deeper with a question like this, you'll find it actually finally does begin to heal.
Yeah, because I did notice that. So, for example, a lot of people, different degrees of unworthiness. That's
everybody.
Yeah. Not the package, right? So the thing is that I've noticed that if I was questioning something, I would be like, oh, why is that? Why? So that seems like an innocent inquiry. But then I'm like, well, maybe because you're a bad person. Maybe because you deserve it. Maybe you did something. Or, oh, but then maybe is a karmic pattern, karma. Yeah. Or maybe it's whatever. So these are phenomenon answers.
Yeah.
But what happens is that then they shut you down. See those phenomenon answers? They shut you down. They shut me down. So then I'm not able to stay with it, to go beyond that. Because there's
you have to develop this even attitude, this kind of even... what's the word? That no matter what answer comes from your contemplation, whether it's, if you suddenly have this beautiful big seeing, like Vidya had before, you know, this, wow, I've just thought separate. Even that, I'm not going to stop. I'm not going to close up. And even if I get this really negative, phenomenal answer, negative thoughts or emotions or something, whatever it is, there is no final answer to a contemplative question. There is just ever deeper answers. So the moment you notice I've shut down, I've accepted this is the answer, well, okay, I can just open up again and ask my question again. It's as simple as that. And you just become clearer and clearer. This is the answer I've always accepted. this idea that I'm just not good enough, or whenever this feeling comes up of unworthiness, I just completely agree with it and then begin to act from that place. You'll see, as you get used to how it feels to be open more in contemplation, that becomes an attitude or a way of being rather than something I'm doing spiritually. it's easier to feel suddenly. Suddenly I'll feel very heavy, very contracted, very very separate, very finite, very limited. And that'll be where I've accepted one answer as the answer. You know, human beings are trained to look for the right answer. And there isn't. This is there's just deeper and deeper phenomenal answers, and also the silence in the background, the noumenon answer to any question. And as you just, okay, I've closed up again there around an answer. We all do it to start off with. Of course, some evidence that I'm a finite, limited being separate to everything is going to seem more compelling at first than the knowing that I don't end anywhere. You know, and there'll be some experience, some emotion, some person that's triggered something inside, you know. So you just notice where that's happening. And you can even do that ahead of time. Where do I really still listen to my mind, to the thought answers, to the emotions? Which person is it that I tend to just let them override what I'm thinking and feeling? You know, you can sort of have a look at your life objectively and say, when I'm around this being, I'm probably much more likely to close up and lose my open. So you can kind of forewarned is forearmed a little bit, and, you know, just to notice where you, and your body will tell you immediately, either through negative thoughts, emotion, or physical pain, or some experience of not enough of something. Immediately, that's where we've closed around one answer. You know, we're just really experiencing that one answer again and again.
Yeah, I guess it's being comfortable with my discomfort in a way.
And in an open stance of contemplation, you cannot reject anything. You can't. By the very nature of being open to see what you're asking, you are open. And we only ever suffer where we pay attention to one particular thought. And that's impossible to do. There is no middle ground between believing a thought and keeping experiencing it, or questioning if it's true. And if we're kind of developing this contemplative attitude, we're just developing a habit of being open. And you could be asking, what day of the week is it? It doesn't really matter what question you're asking. But in the openness of the asking, you're automatically not able to believe any thoughts in that moment. So you simultaneously, immediately above the mind as you're asking the question. That's why you get so much more clarity. And you'll notice immediately then, or much quicker, this, ooh, I've suddenly feel very limited, very heavy, very contracted, where I've picked up a thought or something, or allowed some outer experience to dictate what I'm going to think or feel, you know, rather than this open stance.
Right. Okay.
Very good question.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it. That's what you get when you start contemplating. Yes.
Yes. It'll show you both sides of the question. It'll show you where you feel limited, finite, separate. And it'll also show you ever greater, that you're not ever those things. And you can embrace both of those. Okay, just to see, this is where I imagine separation. You're starting to really come out of it, aren't you? Because normally we're just unconscious in those moments. I'm consciously agreeing that I'm separate to this being, and therefore I have the same experience again and again and again.
Yeah, the replay. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And we've all had enough of that, thank you. Lovely. Thanks. Good to talk to you. Okay. Last but not least, Doreen.
Hi, Helen.
Hi, good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you too. Definitely other people's questions and your responses probably touch on what I'm about to ask. And it's a two-part question. First is, as a spiritual student, is it worth it? Is it appropriate or beneficial to have a spiritual focus on healing the physical body? So that's one part. Mm-hmm. And tied to that, kind of, I've been doing a lot of reflection and contemplation on this idea of visualization or imagining compared to just being. Because I know that, like, you know, where you can talk about physical or manifesting healing, mm-hmm. or manifesting anything, but I can focus on, like, in meditation, I can be in meditation and be the noumenon or have that, or I can imagine a physical body that it's healed. And when I think about that, it makes it, there's this tug of war going on. So it's there's a part of me that's saying, no, don't do that, because it's like you are trying to make a situation different than what it is, mm-hmm. instead of just accepting it, even though I'm in a spiritual or a very centered space, because I've had experiences in my physical body where I've had pain, and there are times when I will actually focus on the pain and it'll eventually go away. But then there's a part of me, it's like there's a tug of war going in my mind saying, no, don't do that. No, you should be here. Just be. And so it doesn't feel settled. And I don't like the feeling that it doesn't feel settled, because no matter what I do, it feels like I should be doing something different.
Yeah. And can you see, really good question, can you see this idea that there's two, that these are different things? Can you see this idea? Am I either spending time just being, or I'm engaging my mind, visualizing what I want to have show up? And they're not different. As I see clearer and just more able to just be what I am, then my mind is going to be able to engage in much more healthy thinking. And maybe this is the purpose of mind, to be able to give shape and form to that shapeless noumenon in the highest expression possible in this moment in regards to the body. Obviously, that would be a healthy, happy body with, you know, vitality and well-being and all of that, a sense of aliveness. So the struggle, again, is not with which one of these should I do. The struggle is that I think that they're two. So I feel torn, because I naturally want to do both, because they're the same thing. You are, the mind and the body is the noumenon appearing as the mind and body. And of course, that just beingness will filter down into the mind and body as these inspirations to do these things, you know, to kind of, and it might even help you, you know, you go full circle. So let's say my body's feeling really unwell and unhealthy, and I imagine myself going for a run or doing something, you know, feeling really vital and healthy, or, you know, just feeling very much where I want to be with my body. And then when I imagine that, it brings up some negative emotion that'll show you what beliefs are still in the way of that. So you can imagine what you want, but then notice what comes up in opposition to that. So when I used to try to imagine myself at the weight that I wanted to be, I could imagine it, I could see a clear picture, but it would bring up unworthiness, it would bring up anger, because I just didn't seem to be able to, you know. So it was obvious that there were still beliefs being believed about myself, of which this excess weight was a reflection of. So in that case, I stepped back from the visualizing a little bit and worked on the contemplation, until I could visualize what I want, and it felt exciting, and it felt, oh, this, you know, like this is what's coming, you know, a real sense of this is what's about to happen, excitement, and you know that feeling, right? That just to imagine it, it's gonna, you know, all the things you say in the law of attraction stuff, you see it and it'll happen. But there's got to be this clearing out of the beliefs that are in the way first. So if feeling overweight for me made me feel shameful of my body, I had to recognize I felt shame about myself and deal with that, so the body could then begin to reflect my newfound sense of being exactly how I'm supposed to be in this moment. My body will be exactly how it's supposed to be in this moment more and more. It's going to reflect that. So the two things begin to work together. They're really the same one, hopefully you can see. And yes. It becomes a two-pronged thing.
Yeah, thank you for that. That was a really good explanation. I'm noticing, like, with this and other things, that I'm feeling I need to have permission to do or not do things. And it's like I'm constantly questioning, as a spiritual student, should I be doing this? Is this okay? And it's like, it's constant lately.
It's just an understanding of where I tend to externalize authority. The real authority is always yourself, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, so if I say something that doesn't agree with you, that's a clear sign that that's not right for you. You know, if I say something that does agree with you, it's a clear sign. It's just agreeing with what you know is right already inside. And your own guidance eventually will become much more important than any spiritual teacher, if not already. You know, it should be, it's helpful to have a guide along the way, isn't it? But eventually we have to step back into our own authority. And that's probably what you're feeling. Like, I don't really want to reference, or I'd like to know what's good for me, what's right for me, and then just check, rather than it being the other way around, you know?
Yeah, I think doubt is floating in too, because I definitely have worked with my inner guidance and have felt when, oh yeah, this is true. This feels good. It's been weird the last couple of weeks where it just feels like I think doubt is coming in, like I'm not trusting, or maybe it's just the refining. Like it's
people causing me to. You'll be seeing clearer where you feel subtly there's a difference between you and me, or you and a spiritual teacher, a spiritual authority. There's just a subtle sense that there's a bit subtle sense of difference, which is diminishing between us, you know, that where I tend to doubt myself and ask for an external authority to confirm or whatever, you know, and that'll become clearer that I must be able to have the same knowing inside, you know, that I'm getting from external, because it's not really external.
Right.
It's just an old way of being with ourselves, and I tend to just undermine myself or doubt myself rather than trusting my own judgment, my own intuition.
Right. Well, thank you.
You're very welcome. Very good. Good. Okay. So we have run over time. So if anybody does need to go, then this will be recorded anyway. Let me stop and start this recording.